I'm Peter Chapman. I'm a PhD student in the Computer Science Department at Carnegie Mellon University. And we've heard a lot of good stuff today on the captured flag format and its educational benefit and how we can improve that. And I'm going to talk a little bit about our efforts at CMU to apply the format to a new audience, high school students, while maintaining its authenticity and educational value. So at Carnegie Mellon, we're very fortunate to be host to the captured flag team, PPP. PPP plays in, it's composed of a mixture of undergraduates, graduate students, and alumni, and they play in as many capture flag competitions as they can get their hands on, I think over 20 a year. And they've been very successful. In fact, over the past 2 years, they've won DEF CON's CTF, which is considered by many to be one of the premier CTFs in the world. And once a year, they host their own competition called Plaid CTF. So despite their success, it's actually pretty hard to recruit new students from Carnegie Mellon's campus to join the team. And that seems surprising, but we realized it really shouldn't be. When you think about who's playing in CTFs, although the community is growing, it's a relatively small group of people. Anecdotally, we thought about who we see play, and we see university students, security professionals, and the occasional hobbyist that just really loves computer security. And connecting all these groups of peoples is an absolute passion for computer security. So we realized that if we wanted to grow the audience of people that are participating in these events, we need to build an event that targets people and accommodates people that are not already passionate about computer security. And as we thought through our efforts on campus to get freshman students to try out the team, we realized that high school students would make a great target. And high school is a really important time in someone's educational life. It's very formative. Students are expected to go into college with at least an idea of what they want to major in. Two or three majors is often what a freshman student at a university will tell you that they're thinking about. And unless they've had a decent exposure to computer science or computer security, that's not even going to be on the radar. It's unlikely a student's going to come in and be like, I'm going to take computer science even though I know nothing about it because I never had any in my high school. I think they use a computer. So this is a really important time that we can reach students. Additionally, high schools as an institution provide a lot of support for events like this. It's not uncommon for students to participate in after-school clubs and teachers to support these endeavors. And for teachers to actually help students find a place, a regular time to practice, and hold them to it. And additionally, especially outside the core curriculums that are taught in high schools, such as technology education, teachers have a lot of freedom in day-to-day activities. And so it's very feasible for a teacher to integrate the participation in a competition like this into their typical coursework, perhaps as homework or as a classroom activity. Despite these opportunities, there are a handful of serious challenges. First and foremost, learning how to program and just computer science in general is not a standard thing that is taught in high schools. In fact, I don't think there's a state that requires it. Additionally, even for those that have been fortunate enough to have a background in computer programming, it's often in a very educational context. It's using perhaps an educational language such as Alice or an educational development environment that's strictly meant to get all the details out of the way so the student can concentrate on core concepts such as control flow of a program or functions, et cetera. And so taking them out of that sandbox in which they've learned to deal with the core concepts of computer science and asking them to solve computer security challenges can be quite difficult. And additionally, the number of students that have any kind of background or any kind of exposure in computer security beyond choose a good password is very small. So taking all that into account, we hosted our own competition called Pico CTF. It was specifically targeted at high school students, and we hosted it in May of 2013. We really strive to maintain the authenticity of the events that target college-level and professional players, such as those on PPP, and we did this by making sure that all the challenges, although far easier, involved realistic vulnerabilities. So they were using their actual web browser, targeting an actual program running on a real server of our creation for them. And one of the themes that we had throughout our efforts was to provide as many different motivations and rewards for students participating as possible. That way, we can try to target students in a barrage of ways to find something that works, that helps them get through the competition and hopefully see how much fun computer security and computer science can be. And perhaps the best example of this is an interactive story-driven game that we built in cooperation with the Entertainment Technology Center of Randy Pausch fame. So we had 57 challenges in our competition across five fairly standard categories: digital forensics, cryptography, reverse engineering, web exploitation, and binary exploitation. Each problem was assigned a point value that corresponded roughly with the difficulty. And we had members of PPP assigned with their vast experience in creating and playing in competitions, create the prop challenges, and assign reasonable difficulty levels, or point values. By the end of the 10-day competition, the team with the most points won the event. So in part of our efforts to provide as many motivators as possible for students to compete and leave with a rewarding experience, we organized these challenges into a series of levels. The levels corresponded with the expected background knowledge in order to complete a level, and so that students don't only look at their progress in the event and say, okay, I got 700th place, they can see, oh, I completed level 3, which corresponds to the AP computer science course that I'm currently involved in. And we made these levels very explicit, not only within the competition beforehand and with teachers, but to the student. And after the event, we awarded certificates that teachers and students could download and pass out in class, frame if they wanted to, I know a handful did that, and also put on their college applications, because that's very important to students in high school, looking at many ways to stand out from the crowd. Carnegie Mellon Admissions was very excited about this competition, in fact, displayed it on the front page of CMU's admissions site for a few months. And so the goal here is that even if you didn't get first, second, or third place, you finish with some sense of accomplishment. It's not strictly about how well you did relative to other people. It's how far you went on your own. And we integrated these levels directly into the game I mentioned earlier. And so we went about creating challenges in kind of an interesting way. We picked what elements of the story in the game we wanted to advance. We came up with a relatively associated skill that we wanted to teach, and then laid out how we wanted it to progress through the story. And afterwards, we laid out the challenges onto the maps of the levels of the game. So this is level 1. And storyboard how we wanted the challenges to work. And so I'm going to show a brief example of how the game works and how students went through the challenges. So I'm on the website right now. And feel free to, I encourage people to log in and register and play around with it. And so I've created an account that has solved the first challenge. And so the name of the game is Toaster Wars, and the story takes place with the student doing homework late at night. They hear a robot crash land in their backyard, and they want to fix the robot. They want to repair it. And so they're using these series of hacking challenges to repair the robot and try to uncover its origin. And so I'm going to do a problem related to network communication. And here it's describing that we have a network trace, a PCAP file. And so I have the option of either going to a website, a web-based version of Wireshark to view the PCAP file, or downloading it myself. And this brings up a very important point. It's that we wanted high school students to participate, and we wanted to accommodate them as much as possible for the resources they have available. And it's very common for high school administrators to lock down the applications that they can download or install. So we wanted, ideally, that every challenge in the competition could be completed from the web browser. So we provided we worked with a company called CloudShark, which has a version of Wireshark that's strictly in the browser. And we also provided web-based terminals to access servers that we've hosted for the students to use in case they didn't have access to command line Linux computers or couldn't install VMs or something. So I'm going to download the file. Okay, and so I see a network trace, and here it's showing a couple things to the student. One is that the network communication is complicated. Another is that it's broken up into a series of packets. And also, it's giving them exposure to a very common tool, Wireshark. It's I'm almost sure everyone here has used it once or twice in their endeavors. And so they can look through, and even if they don't fully understand what's going on, they can start seeing something related to the story. So here's some text talking about a robot being initialized. And I'm going to follow the stream, and I get the full communications that was intercepted. It's some GPS coordinates for the robot, and I'm going to enter that in as the answer. So when I answer a question, the story progresses further, and this provides a very important visual, positive motivation for the student to continue. Not only is their point value increasing, and they now are from 700th place to 650th place, they actually go farther in the story and farther in the game. Additionally, the game serves which is something we didn't envision at the beginning of our efforts, but was incredibly important, is that it brands the participation in this event to something that someone outside of computer security can understand. So if you're a teacher or a counselor or a parent, you can see someone competing and be, okay, they're going through this game. They're not sitting at a web browser all day clicking around. This is something I can understand. And it also it helped a lot for showing the amount of effort we put in the game. So a counselor, when they get notice of participation, they don't feel like they're taking a chance when they forward it out to their colleagues, teachers, and other schools. Going back. So we hosted the event in late April, early May of 2013, and teams could consist of at most 5 students and a limited number of teams per school. We were really thrilled with the outcome. We had nearly 2,000 teams participate from almost 1,000 different schools from 48 states. Absolutely great, wildly beyond our expectations. And we were very fortunate to be sponsored by a number of different organizations that allowed us to give cash prizes to the winning teams and schools. I know one of the winning teams hosted a CTF of their own creation for their own high school, and the winning school actually built an embedded programming systems course using the funds that they hosted the next semester. So a lot of what we talked about today is evaluation, and we tried a lot of new things here with a new audience in particular. And so we wanted to see what worked and what didn't. So we drew in our evaluation on 2 main sources of data. One was submissions and interactions with the website, and the other was a post-competition survey, which we've had about 400 responses. So one of the first things we wanted to ask was the game useful, or did students enjoy it? And we gave students a choice. They could either use the game we provided, or they could use a very traditional text-based viewer that is used in pretty much every competition of, here's the problem, here's the text describing it, here's the score, here's where you submit it. Very straightforward and very simple. And what we found was across all students, there was about a 50-50 split of who used one or who used the other. But there's a very clear trend that students that scored more points tend to opt for the text-based problem viewer. And lower-scoring students participated primarily using the game. And looking at the detailed responses that were associated with questions on the survey about this, we seem to think that it has to do with the students that were primarily concerned with competing just wanted to get to the problems as quick as possible. These are the students that are intrinsically interested in computer security. They don't need external motivations. They are playing in a CTF that is targeted at their level. And for the other students, they're doing this as more of an exploratory exercise. And so they don't have any particular interest necessarily in working with PCAP files, but they're going through the event in more of a game and a classroom exercise. Additionally, we looked through, we asked a question regarding their overall opinion of the game, regardless of whether or not they used it. And overall, opinions were fairly high, or fairly good regarding the game. And again, we see another correlation between the age of the student and their opinion of the game. Younger students tend to think more highly of the game than older students, and this trend also correlated with the score in the competition. But largely, no one really was put off by the game. They didn't have a negative experience because the game existed. They just chose to opt not to use it. Additionally, we wanted to see ask students about the challenges themselves. And so we asked students what challenges did they want to see more of and what challenges they want to see less of. Students largely said they wanted to see more web security and cryptography questions. Looking at the free responses, we believe this is caused by the fact that web security questions in particular can be mostly done in your web browser. Students are very used to interacting with the web browser and playing around with things. So going to view source or using developer tools isn't completely foreign to them. Additionally, with the cryptography, those challenges could be done in a high-level language that they might have learned, such as Python. And they relied on concepts that were more comfortable to them. So generally, math, factorization, multiplication, things like that. And so it wasn't completely foreign, and there wasn't a huge wealth of knowledge that they had to gain. Looking at the other question, what did students want to see fewer challenges of? Overwhelmingly, they said binary exploitation. This is a favorite of PPP, and so there were quite a few binary exploitation problems here, things like buffer overflows or return-oriented programming. This trend was largely caused because interacting with these challenges is very difficult. It requires not only a knowledge of how programs lay out internal memory and how a program is actually executed, but additionally very specific tools such as debuggers like GDB or just knowledge of the command line. And all this all together, all at once, was just overwhelming for students that didn't have a large background for it. So a few takeaways from holding this event. One was that the format worked well for high school students when we specifically targeted to them. Additionally, that people generally like the game that we tried out, with younger students and less advanced students preferring it actually over the traditional viewers that are used in these competitions. Additionally, unfamiliar and complex tools can frustrate, and that was shown very well with the binary exploitation. And so we don't think that we should necessarily adjust the problems according to what we think students want. Rather, we should provide tools and learning materials that help them gradually get through it, perhaps separating the tools from the core concepts, at least at first. So real briefly, I want to talk about our efforts beyond hosting this competition. One is that we've open sourced our platform and challenges. The challenges have been used in over 40 high schools as part of Project Lead the Way, and the platform has been used to host over half a dozen CTFs. And we're really working to maintain it so that we can help people more easily deploy, increase the diversity of these events. So now I will love to answer a few questions. As time allows, I will also be here all week for Usenet security.
Ann Cox, DHS. So this was targeted at younger students, but there's also a large population of people who are looking to change career fields and get into cybersecurity. Have you tried this, for example, at the community college level or at some kind of an adult wanting to transition?
Yes. We actually hosted a version of the competition for Cisco as part of their computer security conference that they hold annually. And it was very successful there. It was a way that they wanted to really get people involved in the conference and do something fun. And they had nearly 100 people from the conference participate, and they absolutely loved it. And it was very effective. So we targeted our event at high school students because that made branding and it helps focus a lot more. And we were able to give prizes out more reasonably and get teachers involved. And there's a lot of benefit to having teachers helping students through things. But the lowering the barrier of entry is also very, I have reason to believe it is effective for those that are not only in high school.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, Mark Gondry, Naval Postgraduate School. So the survey results that showed that the high school players didn't like binary exploitation as much, is that an indicator that those types of challenges don't fit into web-based frameworks as well, or is that an indication that those are the challenges we need to innovate on scaffolding?
I think it's a mixture of both. We tried our best to provide there was a web-based command line tool in which you could interact, and you could also download the problems, the binaries themselves, and run them and reverse engineer them. But I think it's largely just, it's just too many tools and interacting in things in too many ways. If you're a brand new student to this kind of thing, you're going to have trouble just changing your directory in a Unix environment, and much less trying to figure out a way to print 750 A's into standardin. And so all those little things just cause a lot of frustration. And so we're going to put efforts into easing a lot of those little pain points and slowly allowing them to broaden what they can do.
Adam Chostak, Microsoft. In sort of following on that last question and your answer, have you looked at using SixSentMahaly's flow framework as a way to decide what you need to adjust? I've personally found it to be a very useful approach when I'm thinking about, wow, I've got this big problem, people are stymied, and so I'm just curious if you've looked at that as a tool.
Not right now. Those kinds of frameworks for breaking down problems are going to be very useful. And I think a mixture of doing that and just testing them a lot with students is going to be how we discover what works and what doesn't and exactly where the pain points are. I think that's a great idea. We haven't done that in particular.
Cool. Thanks.
So mine's a two-parter. Have you? What kind of gender ratio did you have?
That's a great question. When we started this experiment, we didn't intend to use it for research. We didn't intend it to really be that successful. And we did not ask that. On the principle of asking as little information as possible from high school students, we didn't ask that. And that's something we've come to regret and we'll fix in the future. We have a brief pre-competition survey, but it wasn't representative of who actually participated, so I don't want to share that result.
Oh, absolutely. So then I would just like to recommend that an analysis of the type of task by gender, because I think there's going to be a correlation.
Yeah. So one of the mistakes we made is we used group accounts, which is very standard for Capture Flag competitions, but it made not only statistics of how many people participated or how long they participated difficult. It would be great to know if individual students struggled, or if teams diversified in what they solved, or they broke down things, or as you just mentioned, whether or not specific people had trouble with different problems.
And I recognize the problems you have because you're dealing with an underage population.
Yeah,
and it's I'm
we interact a lot with the IRB and try to stay on the right side of everything.
Agreed.